Welcome to Tiny House Tales, a podcast about the experiences of people who have joined the tiny house movement. I'm John Weisbarth.
And I'm Zach Giffen. Enjoy as we give listeners a behind-the-scenes glimpse into the absolute joys and inherent challenges of living tiny.
Together, we'll seek to unlock the successful strategies for minimalist living and learn more about how tiny living has made a big impact on people's lives.
Entertaining and informative, Tiny House Tales is mandatory listening for anyone who has ever dreamed of downsizing or has simply craved a more simple lifestyle.
Welcome to Tiny House Tales. Nailed it. Question for you, bud. What's going on with the beard?
I'm growing it out.
Yeah, you've always got like the 5 o'clock shadow thing kind of going, but this is like full like woolly mammoth.
This is me taking full advantage of the platform that we're on now, right?
Nobody
can see my beard. They don't need to know how scruffy I look because this is a podcast. And this is part why I'm going to flex that kind of podcast capacity, you know?
Yeah, I'm not saying it looks scruffy. I'm just saying it's bushy.
All right. Well, you don't have to worry about it because I'm all the way tucked up into the forest up here in Washington. And, you know, it's just camouflage. I just blend in with the culture around here.
Yeah, with the other Sasquatches. Yeah, I get it. Although your hair is kind of nicely combed. I have to imagine that that has to be due to our guest today. I feel like you, even though the rest of the world can't see us, I feel like you wanted to look good for our guest today. And I don't blame you.
Well, I do want to do my very best. I want to bring my A game here because I know that Asha is going to bring her A game. Oh, did I let it out of the bag? Should I bring that information in a little differently?
Well, the cat's out of the bag now. So listen, we have a super very special guest. That's how you know it's a big one. A longtime friend of yours. I didn't meet her until she was on Tiny House Nation. I fell in love with her like the rest of America immediately. One of the kindest souls, one of the most interesting stories, and honestly, one of the coolest houses we ever got to build. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show, Asha Mevlana! Yeah!
Yay!
Hi, everyone!
Welcome, Asha!
I'm so happy to be here.
Asha, I am so excited to see you. It's crazy because we basically haven't seen each other since the show, but I was like, I've thought of you often. And I was just doing a little research and like looking through stuff and found a treasure trove of videos of you online, including your host reel. And I was like, I love this girl so much. And I want to watch any travel show where you're going around and eating scorpions because, my God, it is amazing.
Oh, boy. You saw that one. Yeah, that was in China. And by the way, I'm vegan. But for the camera, I ate a scorpion.
See, that's why we brought you onto the show, because you're a team player. And we knew that, you know, no matter how nervous John and I might be to kind of host a podcast like this, that you would have our back. You wouldn't bite us like that scorpion or anything like that.
I see what you did there, Zach. That was really good. Okay, Asha, we have so much to talk about. So much to talk about. And I kind of feel like jumping around because your backstory is amazing. But I want to talk about the tiny house almost first and foremost. And I guess what I want to ask about is what it was that brought you to think, yeah, a tiny house is sort of the tool that I need for what I am doing right now in my life. What was kind of the impetus for that? Or was it just because Zach and his cool beard?
Pretty much Zach and his cool beard. But I mean, there were other things too. Like, I mean, there's so many ways to answer this for me because there's so many things that brought me to a tiny house. I guess the number one thing is that I'm a touring musician and I really had never had a spot to come home to. It was always like I was living out of suitcases or hotels or staying on a friend's couch or wherever it is. And it was like having a huge house or renting just seemed kind of crazy to me. And so I love the idea of a tiny house where I could like have a space that worked for me, just a small space to come home to that was cozy and it felt like mine that I could call home. That was the kind of number one reason.
That sounds very similar to the path that found me towards tiny homes. And where were you in terms of your life at that moment? How old were you and what were you doing professionally?
First of all, never ask a lady how old she is, Zach. Jesus.
I said way back then.
30? No, it was after that. No, but I've been interested in tiny houses for a very, very long time. I mean, the other thing is that, well, that's a whole other thing, but I did have storage units in three different cities because I'd always moved around a lot. Storage unit in LA, storage unit in Boston, storage unit in New York. And, you know, honestly, it's like, it's put away, but it really is like this weight on you when you have this stuff and it's just sitting there. And so when I thought about the idea of going tiny, I was like, wow, I could actually just get rid of all that, move everything, all the things that I just really want and need, you know, and live with the things that just bring me joy. And there was that book, Marie Kondo, you know, Marie Kondo?
Yes.
The Life-Changing Magic, kind of whatever the book is. Yeah. And I had read that book and that really inspired me. And I was like, wow, I could actually live like that, you know, and just live with the things that bring me joy. And so when I was doing the tiny house, I went, I cleared out all three storage units, gone, you know, gave the stuff away, realized, I mean, there was stuff from when I was like 2 years old that my mom had kept that I really had no interest in anymore. And so it was like this freedom. Like when I got the tiny house, I can't even describe the feeling, but I literally felt this freedom and everything, like this weight had lifted from me, just living with the things that gave me joy. Yeah.
That's something that we talked about a lot on the show. And I guess I don't want to kind of bury the lead here because it is interesting. And I know that for you, maybe the idea of experiences over things wasn't always the priority, but you did have a pretty life-changing experience in your early 20s. Could you tell us a little bit about that and how that changed your perception of what, you know, really was valuable in your life? And I think that ultimately then led you down the road to this tiny house decision.
Yeah. So I had just graduated from college. I was living in New York City, working, kind of going to climb the corporate ladder. I didn't really know what I was doing, but I'd always played music since I was 6 years old. But it was like, everyone told me you couldn't make, you know, a living as a musician. So I believed them. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll just climb the corporate ladder, make lots of money, have houses all over the place, travel, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then when I was 24, I was diagnosed with breast cancer and it had actually been misdiagnosed for 2 years. And I found it myself. And the doctors, you know, at first told me there's nothing to worry about at all. I was way too young. And then finally at 24, I got it checked out again. And that's when it came back and they said, you know, you have breast cancer. They had never seen anyone that young at the time that had breast cancer. So I felt really alone. I thought, oh my gosh, I have had this misdiagnosed for 2 years. I'm definitely going to be dying soon. And I think that was when I sort of overnight, everything changed, all my priorities, everything. And I just said, you know, I have no idea how much longer I have to live, but I want to do things differently. And I do not want to have regrets. And, you know, the things that I'd always wanted to do, I'd always wanted to be a musician, but it was too scared. I'd always wanted to travel the world, but was like, oh, I can't do that on my own. I don't know how to do that. And I was able to reprioritize really quickly. And I said, what do I want to do in this next year? And the answer, and what was important to me? And the answer was just like experiences. It wasn't about money anymore. You know, I used to think, how do I be successful? Oh, it's making more and more money. That's what I was kind of programmed into thinking. And then all of a sudden I was like, wow, that's actually not what's important here. The important thing is being surrounded by like loved ones and family and having experiences. And so I decided that as soon as I was done with all my chemotherapy treatments and all of that stuff, I was going to quit my job and move to LA to become a musician. So that kind of changed everything.
Yeah. That sounds scary.
It was terrifying. Yeah. I mean, well, the whole thing was terrifying, honestly. It was like the fact that I was going to die. And I was like, wow, I haven't experienced so much of like what I want to experience. So that part was scary. The moving to LA thing was terrifying because I didn't know anyone. I remember I was landing in LA with two suitcases and I knew like a distant cousin and she was going to put me up for a little bit until I found a place. And I didn't have any friends there. And as I was landing, I was like, oh my God, what the hell am I doing? Like, this is actually insane. And so but I just went for it. And I think, you know, I never used to go for things. I used to kind of play it safe. And that was, so that was really different. And the not having regrets was like, I'm just going to go for things. It's not about failure anymore. Who cares? It's just about going for things and meeting people and having those experiences.
That's the beauty of, or I would say that that's the gift of tragedy, right? It's that it almost kind of life has that ability to kind of trap you into what you think you're capable of sort of thing. And then you experience something that like cancer or the death of a loved one or something really traumatic. And it just kind of clarifies what it's about and almost frees you from that trap.
Absolutely.
I wonder, Asha, what is your advice though to make a decision like that, maybe without the tragedy. I guess what I'm getting at is this is a story that we hear a lot about. You almost get desensitized to it. But I was thinking here and knowing you and also knowing myself at how like I'm kind of the guy that is a little bit, I'm more cautious. I'm less willing to go take the chances all the time. And I wonder, is there a way, do you have any advice for me? How can I get to that spot without having to be diagnosed with cancer?
Well, I hope you never get diagnosed with anything like that. But I think for me now, people look at my life and the things I've done and they think I'm fearless, and it's completely opposite. I am scared of everything, truly. And I think what I had to learn to do, and I think for people in general, it's really a muscle. It's like you have to, as long as you keep doing it, like I actually put this whole list together when I was thought I was going to die of all the things I was scared of and all the things I just wanted to go for and not be scared of things anymore. So I put this whole list together. I mean, random things, bungee jumping, you know, skydiving. I mean, anything like that, that I was possibly scared of. And I was like, I'm just going to go through this list and just do it. I just don't want to be scared of things anymore. And so I just started going down that list. Literally, I jumped out of a plane in New Zealand. I was literally shaking. I was attached to someone. So I was not by myself and I had to go. There's no way out of it. And shaking, I was crying. I was like, well, this is how I'm going to die. But at least it's in New Zealand. I have a nice, you know, view on the way down. And I just had to go for things. I had to keep pushing myself. And each time I did something, it was almost like it was easier to do the next thing, you know? So it's about just starting and just keep pushing yourself. And I think, I used to live in this comfort zone. I really liked being in that comfort zone because I could control it. And after being diagnosed, I realized I can't control my life. I can't control anything that happens. I can kind of go towards something, but it's always going to change and I have no control. And so that was a really important lesson for me to not try to control everything that happens. Yeah. So I just try to live outside my comfort zone now. And that's actually that's kind of my happy place outside of my comfort zone. I'm like, oh, I'm kind of getting bored. What else can I do now? And so it kind of gets exciting. It's like, it's almost like an adrenaline rush, you know, like once you start doing these things.
So what she's saying, John, is that it's hopeless for you, actually. I'm sorry. The fear is going to be there for forever. No, it's just, it's kind of one of those truths of life. It feels like is that the only way to kind of dissolve fears is to kind of get yourself out there, you know, and get out of your comfort zone.
You know, there's this great movie from like the 80s. It's called Defending Your Life. It's got Mel Brooks in it. And the whole idea is these guys, you die and you go up to, it's not heaven. You're at this place called Judgment City. And the whole crux of the thing is that fear is what stands in the way of going to the next level. And so it's almost like this idea of like, there's like a reincarnation and stuff. And it's like, until you overcome your fear, you aren't able to fully embrace love. You're not fully able to embrace like your experiences, all that kind of stuff, and moves on. And that always stuck with me and I always loved it. I just got to keep acting on it.
Well, I want to talk about fear a little bit, like back to Asha's story a little bit, because I think when you talk about tiny homes, there is a lot of people that have kind of an ingrained fear of what it would take for them to make that transition. So by the time that you moved into a tiny house, you had already faced breast cancer. You had already moved down to LA without knowing anybody to pursue a career that most people actually don't make happen, which is being a musician. But okay, so you've already faced all these things. So are you so fearless at this point that when you moved into a tiny home, there wasn't any concern there? Or did you have some anxiety about it?
I mean, there's always concern about everything new, you know, that's just a normal, and I'm sort of used to that feeling and I sort of enjoy that. So I think for me, it was a little bit different. I was more excited about it. The fear was like, okay, I'll figure it out. But I definitely understand when people are looking to go tiny, that is kind of terrifying. You know, I did have it a little bit easier because I moved from an apartment in New York and apartments that are not very big. I mean, they could all be considered tiny houses in a way. I also am so used to living on like a tour bus, and that's literally the size of my house, and it's with six girls. So I don't know. I guess I'm used to sort of a lifestyle like that. But, you know, it's funny because right after COVID, a lot of my gigs had sort of disappeared. And anyway, my mom actually moved next door. My brother built a house for her, and it's not a tiny house. And so after COVID, you know, I ended up on the weekends, I started Airbnb-ing my place a little bit because I was like, I need to figure out a way to make some extra money. Like this is, you know, kind of crazy. And but I really didn't want people in my space. And so it was a really difficult decision. I was like, but then I did it. I actually put the price up way higher than I ever would think people would pay. And all of a sudden it was like booked. And I was like, oh no, wait, I don't want people in my house. But what I do have to say about when I did do that was that I met so many people, and they're really incredible people. All these people, they wanted to come and visit because they wanted to see what it was like to live in a tiny house. And how can I envision myself in a space like this? And it was really, and I was able to talk them through it and, you know, take them on tours and explain what works and, you know, what I like best about it and, you know, what might work for their lifestyle. And a lot of them were, you know, already in planning. A lot of them were thinking about it. A lot of them just wanted to experience tiny house living. So it was really, really cool in that way to give other people a chance to sort of try it out without having to totally commit to it yet.
I love this because you're kind of bringing us into, I think, what most people probably want to hear us talk about, which you kind of bumped forward in it in terms of telling people that your mom built her own house behind you. But I think we should really get into what your experience was like on Tiny House Nation a little bit, because you know, we can talk to a lot of people about their stories. Not everybody has been on our show and knows kind of like the behind the scenes dirty secrets about how it all operates and how terrible John is and things like that. So
Zach, you love dirty secrets. I'll start like this though, Asha, before you even get started. I remember hearing about you, and Zach's like, I've got the perfect person and we're going to make the coolest house. Like, you know, you guys, in my understanding, kind of going back and forth and like throwing ideas around and figuring out a way to come up with what was the most unique house and probably the prettiest and definitely like the most, not the most, but it was you. One of the things I loved about our houses that we, you know, Zach would make it very important to him to make the house really say something about the person that lived in it. And I would say yours does for sure. So let's start there. Tiny House Nation, the circus comes to town. What were your impressions? What were your early impressions?
Well, you know, I was lucky enough to know Zach because I was able to throw around ideas with him, and he had so many kind of insights, obviously, because this is what he does. And so, you know, the idea of like doing an L-shaped house, I think you even said go for 10 feet wide rather than 8 feet wide, because I was doing it on a foundation. He goes, the 2 feet makes a huge difference. And then, you know, when you're going on a show like that, it's almost like, oh, should I try to go smaller? Is this like a competition? Like, do I need to go like 8x20 and try to fit my entire life in 8x20? And I remember it was either Zach or Krabby, who was the designer architect on the show. You know, he said, it's not about trying to go as tiny as possible. It's going for the size that will work for you that you can kind of grow into. And so I thought that was really smart. So I ended up doing, my main house is 10x40. So it's 400 square feet. And then the trailer is 8x20. And that's like my practice space and just like an extra room. And so that really worked for me. And I'm so glad that I didn't try to go smaller, because I think that might be an issue with people. If they try to go too small, then they sort of outgrow it pretty quickly.
I'm going to guarantee you Zach was the one that said it, because this is the thing that he preaches all the time about, like, it's not a competition about how small you go, right, Zach?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is, but we don't have to win that competition. Some people are playing it, but it's not me. And I don't encourage other people to jump in on it. There is that competition out there and it's respectful. I'm always impressed because that constriction forces you into the craziest of crazy contraptions to make it work. But that's not what it's about for everyone, right? And absolutely, I am not trying to encourage anyone to get into a home that's so small that it's not going to work. It's absolutely about making it appropriate for your needs.
Right size living, like you said, Asha, it's what is going to work for you. Everything you need, nothing you don't. That's how I think it really works. Coming from someone who doesn't live tiny and hasn't lived tiny, that I do like that mentality.
So, and then, you know, in my memory of how this all went down, there was a little bit of a different distinction. I don't know if this is accurate or not. Asha, when you were talking to me about your house, you're saying, okay, I want it to be on wheels. I want a tiny house on wheels. Like, this is why I'm looking for a tiny house. I'm a traveling musician. My life is kind of potentially going to be moving around. I really like this place. But then it turned out actually you weren't going to be allowed to live in a tiny home on wheels on the property that you had got, and that they required the minimum square footage to be 400 square feet. That was the memory that I had over how that all happened.
You could be totally right. It happened so quickly. I remember this because I can't remember when we had talked. And then I think it was like a couple months later, you're like, okay, here we come. We're going to come in this month. We're building your house in this month. It has to be done. And I was like, oh my God. Okay. And I was like living in New York at the time. I was like, I don't even have a piece of land. What am I going to do? And my brother, luckily, you know, lives in Arkansas and had a piece of land we could build it on. But it happened so quickly. And I remember, I don't know if it was, it actually could have been the very first tiny house in the city. It was either, I think it might have been the first one, and they didn't know what to do with it. They didn't know how to sort of figure out codes, and that was a little bit tricky. So I think, there was a lot of kind of issues that went on with that in terms of like, you know, being on wheels or foundation, and yeah, it was pretty crazy.
Well, and the part that I liked the most was that you were saying, oh, I really want it on wheels, but you know, they're telling me it's got to be on a foundation, and I don't know, what is this? And I, the only thing I'll take credit for in your house really is saying, Asha, why don't you do both? Because I had been waiting for the opportunity. This was almost kind of like me kind of using you to kind of get at kind of a project I had been wanting to be a part of for a long time, because I always thought how cool it would be to have a home where part of it was on a foundation, part of it was on wheels. They were built so that when they joined together, they acted as one unit, but you could take part of it with you. And I still think that that's like a concept that I'm surprised is not catching on a little bit more. So yeah, that's why personally it was such a satisfying project. And I also think, you know, for the listeners, Asha's house actually won some crazy award. It was like Dwell Magazine's Editor's Choice of 2017, not for tiny homes, but for all homes.
Yeah, that was so crazy. It was so crazy.
Yeah. So anyways, yeah. I think that that is a unique thing about your home that I think would more people should explore. Because it's an option that I just don't see people taking up very often.
Well, we'll for sure have to link to some pictures of it and maybe even some videos so that people can see what we're talking about. But yeah, continue on with, because I think there's also, you know, a big deck that you put in between the places, which is a performance space. And like, you know, and I know you talked, there are people saying, well, put the deck in the back, it's more private. And you were like, no, I want it facing the community. I want this to be, you know, for not just me, but for the community, very welcoming in. I just loved all the decisions, and the output of it was beautiful.
Yeah, I definitely don't regret that at all. I have loved having the deck in front, and I was having concerts, public concerts on my deck for every week up until COVID happened. And it was such a cool way for me to meet other musicians, to, you know, meet the neighbors. There's a lot of new people in the neighborhood, and people, and there was a food truck down the street. So people would go get their food at the food truck and then walk down for the concert. And it was just so, so much fun, and people loved it. And even just having like the huge garage door facing all the windows facing the street has been really cool, because I'd be sitting in here and people would drive by and you could see the cars slow down. And I'm not even kidding. This is like 20 times a day. And at some point I had to close my curtains, because I'm like, this is just too much. You know, people are like looking into my life, but people would slow down and just kind of be like, and take pictures. And if I saw them and they were like, looked really interested, I would actually invite them in. I showed so many people my house that were just fascinated by it. It's funny, because the biggest comment I get is people walk and be like, this does not feel like a tiny house.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't. It's, you know, the ceilings are so tall. There's so much light. And that was definitely, you know, my number one thing in building a tiny house is I did not want to feel claustrophobic, no matter how small the house was. And it's just so open.
Tall ceilings are a luxury no matter where they are. In a small house, in a big house, it's a, and that's why I always try to encourage anybody who's building a tiny home to give themselves at least one portion of the home. It doesn't have to be vaulted ceilings everywhere, but like, you know, there's no reason not to just give yourself a little portion of luxury like that. And your home has like almost all vaulted ceilings, and it's beautiful for sure. And you touched on something that I really want to kind of bring into the conversation, and that a lot of times John and I will talk about how a home, the way that it's designed, the way that it's put on a property or where it's parked, or how it has the ability to either close off the occupant from the rest of the world, right? Or has the capacity almost to kind of bring in some kind of access to socialization in a natural capacity. And, you know, putting it into a community setting is one good example of that. But I think your home is this great visual example of how design can do that, for that exact reason that you just kind of mentioned, which is that you are in almost inviting people to come and be interested and be interested in the occupant, right? That's not appealing for everybody, but for people who really like do value social interaction, which I think when you get to the bottom of it is like damn near everyone, you know, we're all a very social species. So, you know, that's something that I think that should be thought about more in architecture and just general.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess it depends where you live. Like if I lived in New York, I would definitely not have built this like this because everyone looks down. You don't talk to people. But in Arkansas, people are very friendly. People you don't know, they say hi on the street. You know, I had to get used to that. And so it kind of fit into the community in that way, you know, just kind of welcoming. You know, I just really liked that.
So going back to your experience on the show, I mean, it's already a whirlwind, as you say, like, we're like, hey, like, you're still in New York and you got to find land and this thing is happening. And then we show up and I would say it's pretty much a whirlwind there as well. I'm just wondering, like, was it what you expected? Was it more than you expected? How was it different? Like, what was, if you can remember, I mean, what stood out to you about, like I say, the circus coming to town?
Well, one of the first things I remember when they put up all the walls. So I could only see the walls and like how it was going to look. And I got this sinking feeling. I was like, oh my God, this is so small. I was like, I don't know if I can live here. And I was like, but now I've already committed. I was like, what do I do? And so it was like a little bit terrifying because when you don't have everything in, it feels a lot smaller, you know? And so, but then when you guys finished the house, I could not even believe like how big it felt. I feel like I'm going to cry just thinking about it. I remember like walking up and seeing the house for the first time. And it was like the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. I still have not gotten used to how cute it is. Like, I just think it's so cute. I mean, it's obviously not perfect for everyone, but for me, it was the most perfect house, you know? It's exactly like what I wanted.
Asha's house is basically built like an amplifier. The story behind that, I love the story behind that, I don't even know if John knows this, but I got a phone call from Asha and she'd already kind of been casted and was working through and it was like pretty much a go. And then she's like, Zach, I have this crazy idea. Don't think I'm crazy completely, but maybe I am just a little bit. What if we built the house to look like a giant Marshall stack amplifier? And basically she thought I was going to be like laughing at her. And of course, instead I said, Asha, do you know what you're dealing with? You're dealing with television.
Yeah. Threaten Zach with a good time.
No, this is the dream come true of a television producer.
And then Zach took it one step further. Was, okay, perfect. Yeah. And let's make it a working amp. And I was like, what? Okay. So yeah. So there's like the speakers, the marine speakers where sound comes out of. And
it's awesome. And that's the mobile part of the tiny house. So your 400 square foot foundation one just looks like a best house that Dwell's ever seen. And then you have a house that kind of matches it, that docks in. That one's on wheels. And that really was your practice space and extra room. And I remember, boy, one of my absolute highlights was at the end of reveal day when we got to all be up on the deck and you played the electric violin for us. And by the way, we should probably mention what you do. I mean, we've said working musician, but like lead violinist for the Trans-Siberian Orchestra for how many years? A lot.
Oh gosh, I think it's like 12 now, maybe.
Wow. A total badass rock star. And I remember, I think because we were like, well, what can we play that we can get cleared? You know, we were like, what is it? And we're like, what's in the public domain? And I think we went with the Star Spangled Banner. And it was as if Jimi Hendrix was like playing it at Woodstocks. I remember being like, oh my God. I just like, it was such a surreal moment. That is like one of the moments, you know, we did 90 plus episodes and a lot of it kind of gets, you know, I don't know, conflated, but that is such a clear memory for me. And it was like one of the highlights of the whole series.
Well, that day, just like seeing my house and then just experiencing it and walking inside it was one of the highlights of my entire life. I could not even believe how lucky I was. It was just, it was so unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, it definitely was one of those builds where, you know, all of them, it's a big push to get to the end. It's always kind of like last minute, but that one was one where kind of at the end of the day and actually everything's all wrapped up, I just wanted to like hang out and just like look at it, you know, and just like let it, like just the feeling of having accomplished it and just appreciating so much is just like, give me just a little more time to bask in the glow of that like feeling of accomplishment. And your house was definitely that in my mind.
Yeah, it was actually really sad because the next day you guys all disappeared and I was like, but that was so fun. Like, you guys have such a cool crew, and I'm just like getting to know everyone. And then, you know, the other thing was that, well, my brother does a lot of kind of construction. So he was telling me later, he's like, yeah, having everyone try to do everything at one time was so crazy to watch. And because I guess usually, you know, you do one thing, like, I don't know, windows come in first, then it's the next thing, then it's, I don't know the order. But he said to have everyone in this really tiny space, trying to do everything at once, trying to get this done in time for the film, like for filming, was absolutely insane.
Yeah, it is. I mean, always a crazy thing. And the thing that people probably don't realize that maybe watch the show and are kind of used to, like, okay, this is TV and like TV magic. And I'm sure there's like three crews and they're going all night, you know, and it's like, they're just kind of, no, that's not how it is. It's like, we work with a builder everywhere we go. And then it's myself and the crew that helps me. And we all kind of just like divide and conquer on terms of the projects. But the builders that we work with typically are pushing themselves harder than they will the rest of the year, you know? And it's like, it's not a clean process by any means to get these homes done. It's a all hands on deck kind of full frontal push to get it done. And that kind of experience is like, it does hurt quite a bit, but it also brings you together with the people that you're working with, right? It's like, you almost like went to battle together. So you get to the other side and it's like, there's this kind of shared experience. Yeah.
I laugh because I know what you mean. When I'm back at the hotel and you're working and I'm getting one of those deep tissue massages, it's like, that can hurt a little bit too. So I get it. You know, it's hard to find the consistency throughout the country, but you know, we all make our little sacrifices. So yeah, I get it. We're kind of all in this together.
John's joking. He's not actually getting deep tissue massages.
Shih Tzu or whatever. Like, I think that's a dog, not a massage. Doesn't matter. You know what I mean?
Well, I think what was important there that might have got lost, because we kind of took it in a different direction, was that, Asha, sounds like you didn't have a bad time working with Tiny House Nation.
Oh my God, it was amazing. Yeah, it really was. I mean, like we've said, it was a whirlwind. It was just, I actually did not think you guys were going to finish it.
We never do. We always feel like it's not going to happen, and then it somehow does, and it like amazes me every time.
It was a full all-nighter before reveal on your house. I do remember that. Wow. I do remember that. I left at like, that was when Josh actually stayed all night long. We left at like 5 a.m. and he was there at like, you know, 10 when we got back. Yeah. Good times.
You know what I remember? It's so funny because, you know, this is something that does, that would happen, I'd say more often than not, is that Zach, I have no idea what other TV carpenters do, but Zach is just a carpenter who happens to be on TV. So he would pull an all-nighter. And it would be like Weekend at Bernie's for the reveal, because I'm here nice and fresh. Here's Zach, like literally like a zombie. And I feel like I would have to like move him through the scene. And he'd be like, okay, what are we doing now? I'm like, okay, we're talking about Zach. Like, okay, got it. And he would like just be like asleep standing up. And then it'd be like, action. And he'd be like, boop, pop up, do his thing. And like, okay, we got that. And then he's back to like sleeping, standing up. It was full Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah, but that's how I get some of my best material, right?
Yeah.
When some of the most comical comments come out.
Oh, for sure. The outtakes on those. So, Asha, here's what I'm curious about. So, you know, the one thing that we never really did too much of was following up on Living Tiny. And so, you know, like we do all of the like, what led you to do it, you know, the process of doing it. We go through the paring down. We do all the prep and we do all the why, but we don't really get into the how. And I feel like the only way to figure out the how is to do it. As you said, like when people come up or they were Airbnb in your place, you'd be like, well, this is what works. This is what doesn't work. What has your experience been like living in the tiny house now that you've done it for a bunch of years?
Well, it's a really, really easy house to live in. I have to say that. It's so open. I mean, my appliances are all full size. My bathroom's full size. I don't ever feel cramped. A couple of things that I did change after it was built was I built stairs going up to the loft, which I think was not allowed at that time. Didn't fit code. So we had to do almost like a ladder. I can't remember what you call those.
I thought we did have stairs, but was it like a ship?
Well, originally there was winder stairs that we did.
They did the step treads, the ship treads, where ship's it's like ladder. Opposite.
Yeah.
Ship's ladder. Yeah. That's what we had to do originally because the stairs didn't fit code because the ceiling was not high enough. We were planning on doing stairs. And then at the last second, we had to change.
Got it. Yeah.
Because it didn't fit code. So once I got the occupancy permit, then I was able to build stairs. Now I have stairs up to the loft.
And let's be specific about that, just so the listeners know. What she means is that there's headroom requirements at the top of a staircase in a typical residential structure that is 8 feet. One of the things that we did in Appendix Q, which would apply to your home.
What's Appendix Q?
Appendix Q is it's an amendment that was put into the building codes, into the guidelines in 2018. And so states that haven't adopted the new 2018 codes, they actually don't use Appendix Q yet. And I think that that's what was going on. But when Arkansas does adopt Appendix Q, your winder staircase should be fine because they've reduced the headroom requirements.
Oh, that's cool. That's great. That was the biggest change in my house. The other thing is I didn't build a closet in my main house. And so, but I have so much cabinet space. So I ended up using like all the cabinets next to, you know, the right of my stove. Like one was like a jean drawer. One was my underwear drawer, sock drawer. And it was kind of crazy looking.
I'm just picturing a dinner party. Someone's like, oh, can you grab some? And it's just like, oh, well, there's all the underwear. I mean, hell of a party.
Yeah, exactly.
Invite me over.
Yeah. So that was one thing. I thought I didn't want a closet. I was like, I don't need a closet in here. And then I was like, whoa, I probably should have built a closet in like my main house. But I have so many cabinets that now next to the washer dryer area, it's a huge like kind of floor to ceiling cabinets. They're like a tall,
like a pantry, kind of like a pantry. Doors. It would have been.
Yeah, kind of like a pantry. Yeah. And so the top part, I put in a pull down, what would you call it? Like a coat rack, pull down coat rack in the top part. And then I put drawers underneath. So that's kind of like my closet now.
Oh man, this is good. This is juicy, tiny house info, insider information stuff, guys.
Only Zach All right, just excited so you know. About a pull down like rack for your clothes. I love it. He really
No. And also it's out of the box thinking. It's like you know, you didn't quite make enough storage for your bedroom. So now your closet is actually in your cabinetry in the kitchen. Why not?
Yeah. And then I got a couple ottomans. And so I put extra like blankets and towels and things like that in there. So, and then also my trailer, I have a huge closet in there. Yeah. So anything that I, you know, don't use on a daily basis, I have in there.
Okay. Well, so speaking of the trailer, I have to ask, you know, this is the question that I always have is like, how's it worked? Like, you know, all the things that I've done, like what worked, what didn't. I mean, you mentioned the speakers on the trailer. Did the speakers still work?
Oh yeah.
And
still work.
And we stuffed the insulation of the smaller home, the portable home. We stuffed the insulation with denim insulation. Yeah. And the whole idea was to make it so that it could be used as a recording studio. Have you ever recorded anything in there?
Not like professionally. I mean, I probably could have. I just have never tried. The speakers still work. I've had dance parties on my deck. We turn the sound on and, you know, people in the neighborhood come over and they love it. But it's more like a practice room. And, you know, it's funny because my mom ended up moving from New York to Arkansas probably a year or two later. And her house was not built yet. And so she decided she was going to stay with me. And it ended up being like a year long, which was a very long time. You know, and so what I have to say, you were right. You. I remember when you told me about the L shape, you're like, the L will give you an extra space. You know, if there's more than one person in the house, it gives some privacy. And it definitely did that. Like, so, you know, she was able to go over there. I was able to go over there and it gave like that separation. So it didn't feel like we were just on top of each other all the time. And that really, really helped.
Yeah, that's something that I try to encourage everybody to think about, which I believe very strongly is that, okay, if you took your home and you took the two separate structures and you joined them together, in my belief, it would actually turn into a less functional structure, right? Because having that little bit of air gap, even if it's 3 feet, is such a separation in terms of how the noise transfers through the space that, yeah, if you want to have a guest over and you want to wake up early and you want to let them sleep, having them all in the same structure, it kind of doesn't work, but a little air gap makes a big difference. And I'm surprised that more people that are going to tiny homes, especially with, you know, maybe multiple people or even small children, don't think about multiple structures. So it's great hearing you say from personal experience, it's actually the way it feels.
Yeah, it was really cool. And then, you know, I've had people like guests over that stay there. And I mean, I guess the only thing there is that, you know, if you have to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, you have to come back into the main house because there's no bathroom in that. That's the only thing. So
just hold it. Just hold
yeah,
it.
Yeah. But it's worked really well. I do have to say I've never driven it. That is one thing on my list of scared things that I've just actually never checked off yet.
Oh, wow.
I'm too scared to drive it.
Have you taken it to a festival yet? Because that was part of one of the reasons you were like, we got to take it and then I can play violin and have a concert anywhere.
I know. I had a lot of high hopes. And then during COVID, I was like, oh my God, this is great. I can just like go around. Then I was like, whoa, I'm going to have to drive this by myself. And I was like, I've never driven anything bigger than like an SUV. I was like, this is too terrifying. I just can't do it. So I backed out of that, but I still love the space.
That's another fear. Just put it on your list. One of these days, we're going to knock it off that list and you'll be just like hitting the road like a champ.
Dude, that'll be your show. Yeah. It'll be called The List. And you'll just go around and you just keep doing all the things that were on that. So Asha, what's next for you? What does the future hold for you? The music still going strong? Tiny House still going strong? I mean, talk me through what we can expect. Because I know we've talked a lot about your music too. And you can even tell us where we can like see it, watch it.
Oh yeah. Well, we just got done with our tour. It's like 2.5 months-ish, kind of go around the US. It's kind of a Christmassy type show. So it happens, you know, November, December. But, you know, I've sort of set my life up in a way that like I can do that tour, I get paid for that, and then sort of do whatever I want for the rest of the year. You know, I don't live like an extravagant lifestyle. Like I spend most of my money on like traveling or
experiences,
you know, experiences, exactly. Things like that. So I don't have like a lot of expenses.
Wait a second. You don't have a lot of expenses? What about a baby?
Oh, well, no, that's my new expense.
All right. I was wondering when we were going to get to this part of it. This is an exciting thing. We have a physical example, a real live person here who can tell us how it is to transition from living in a tiny house by yourself to doing it with a child.
It was a long time ago, but I basically decided if I get to a certain age and then, you know, I end up being single, I'm just going to go for it. And so basically that's what happened, and I wasn't expecting that, but it did happen. And then, so I just have a baby on my own now. And basically I have a crib downstairs. Luckily my mom's next door, so she helps out a lot. We can kind of go back and forth. You know, he's only 10 months now. So he's not super, super mobile, and he can't get into like,
oh, your life is going to change when he gets mobile. Not in a bad way. It just changes. It's always changing. Wait till they're 10. Oh God.
I know.
10 years.
We'll see how that goes. Yeah, I don't know. And then my trailer has become almost like a playroom a lot. So I have a lot of his stuff in there and we'll go in there to play. So it hasn't affected me too much yet. You know, I'm curious to see how it'll be, you know, when he actually is like running around and things like that. Luckily, there's a lot to do outside. So I plan on being outside and going places a lot.
That's okay, so exciting.
So we have to check back in with you. We got to put that question on hold. Yeah. We'll check back in at 2.
Well, can I just say congratulations? I mean, that's amazing. And I'm so glad. And I think you're going to be such an amazing mom.
Thank you. I love it. I'm just, he's so great. He makes me laugh every single day. So we have a good time together.
I mean, I'm sure you're finding all the cliches too. Not to like make this a parenting con, you know, podcast, but right. It's like so hard, so rewarding, so tiring, so exhilarating. It's like all of the things all at once. It's crazy.
I know. JoJo, she is They'll really needy. Dog. Every morning I need to take her on a walk. It's consistency is the thing that really kind of like I recognize, you know, it's like she always needs something.
Yeah.
Not all heroes wear capes, Zach. That a boy.
I'm sorry. I should not be comparing JoJo, my puppy dog, with your.
Oh, you always do.
I just thought.
Well, he is your baby or she.
It's a
he
she. Or she? And she's very much a girl as far as dogs go. I mean, she is just like very ladylike. Okay, we are. Aww. John, I'm in the weeds now, man. You're supposed to pull me out.
Well, I'm going to say this. Asha, it was such a pleasure to see you again. I'm so excited for all that you have going on. And truly, you know, I was kind of alluding to it in the beginning, but you are an inspiration. And that idea, I love that you said it's not like the fear went away. It's just that you accept it and are not afraid of the fear in a way. It's like, oh, it's almost that fear now has become your comfortable place. And you realize that it's not as scary. And I just think that is I think that's something that I certainly take to heart, and I think a lot of people do. And so thank you for being that example. Thank you for being so fun. Thank you for letting us come build a house, and thanks for coming on our podcast.
Yay!
You guys literally changed my life. I'm not even kidding. Like, this house is just, it's really one of the best decisions I've ever made. And I just have you guys to thank for that. And so, yeah, I'm super, super grateful.
Is this where we have to put a disclaimer out there to just say, everybody, we didn't actually set her up. We didn't force her to say that. She did that on her own. I know you think that we're terrible people. We just, like, you know, pretend this kind of stuff. But no, that, thank you for saying that. But mostly, we're just really appreciative that you came on our show and shared your little story, and congratulations on your growing family. And we are absolutely to get driving that trailer on that checklist, and we're going to knock it off hopefully sooner than later.
Perfect. Okay. I love it.
Challenge accepted.
Bye, Asha. Thank you so much.
Deal.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
She is the best, Zach.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Oh, so you're now taking credit for how cool she is?
Well, no, because I reached out and asked her to be on the show.
Well, I asked you to ask her, so I think I get credit then there too.
All right. Well, thank you, John. I appreciate you asking me to ask a friend of mine to do something for you. That's great.
A friend of ours, Zach. We were both there on the show. All I was trying to say was how good it was to see her. Now it's a competition about whose friend Asha is. This is terrible.
There's enough awesomeness about Asha to go around, so plenty enough for everyone.
Well, she's stoked on the house. I think she's going to be a great mom. I'm so glad that she's doing that. We kind of buried it a little bit. I mean, it's a tiny house podcast, but like, she is a kick-ass musician and
rock star.
The Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Yeah, right? It is a holiday show. Go see her. She'll not be hard to see. She's the lead violinist. Absolute rock star. I mean, like, flames going off behind her. All these like crazy things. She couldn't be nicer. She's so cool. I'm so happy for her. And yeah, I hadn't talked to her since we did the episode. It'd been a long, long time. And she's just one of those people that you just reconnect instantly, like it's been no time at all. Awesome.
Yeah. Well, it was great to hear from her again and to learn a little bit more about the way that she's using the house, which is exciting for me. And to hear that, like, you know, the things that I built for her are still being appreciated. That was huge. Because that's my worst fear is that, like, I'm going to leave and then, like, a week later, the people are just going to tear everything I did out. And I don't think that's happened, but.
I know, right before, like, after, you know, right before she got off, you were kind of like, so is this still working? And is that still working? And is this still working? She's like, yeah. You're like, oh, thank goodness. I love it. All right, buddy. Well, hey, another one in the books. Yeah,
absolutely. That was a great, great conversation. I wish we could have gone a little longer.
I just wish you would have shaved that beard. But listen, we can't all have everything we want.
No,
good episode, buddy.
And if you don't like my beard, then you're not going to get much of what you like for a while. Because I think this is staying all the way through the wintertime.
Oh, man. All right. Well, hey, that's Tiny House Tales. We'll see you guys next time. Zach.
All right, John.
Later, brother.
Take care.